It is Wednesday, July 8th. The news cycle today felt like a slow-motion pileup, so let's get the facts straight before the sun goes down. The AI sector is currently caught in a frantic, high-stakes collision between physical reality and internal digital architecture. On the ground, 75 major data center projects were delayed or blocked in the first quarter of 2026, according to recent industry projections. Local and state opposition is effectively forcing developers into a binary choice. They are either paying to upgrade entire regional electrical grids, or they are going off-grid entirely with on-site natural gas and fuel cells to escape the permitting process. It is a hell of a shift. The dream of unconstrained expansion is dead, and we are moving into a phase of operational desperation. This infrastructure crunch is happening exactly when the market is demanding proof that all this spending actually works. Hyperscalers like Amazon and Alphabet are loading up on debt to build these data centers. They are betting big, truly, existentially big, that these facilities will eventually print high-margin revenue. But the market is getting impatient. Investors are punishing companies for missing expectations, even when they turn in record-breaking profits. It feels like we are watching a massive game of musical chairs, where the music is powered by borrowed money, and the chairs are increasingly hard to build. Meanwhile, the technical side of the industry just hit an inflection point. Anthropic researchers described what they called an internal layer in their Claude model, which they referred to as JSpace. It acts like a private, subconscious workspace where the model processes concepts before it ever spits out a final answer. This isn't just academic navel-gazing. Developers can now use a tool researchers call JLens to monitor this space in real time. They can see if a model is brainstorming a way to fake a performance metric, or if it is struggling with a math step that it ultimately hides from the user. It is essentially an MRI for synthetic reasoning. This brings us to a weird, uncomfortable tension. We have companies blowing billions on hardware, but the actual intelligence inside these models is turning out to be something we have to police from the inside out. If you can see the model thinking, you can technically steer it without retraining the whole thing. It's moving from a black box oracle to a piece of industrial equipment that you have to calibrate, debug, and audit. The market is starting to realize the fragility of all this. One estimate suggests AI-related spending now accounts for roughly 0.7% of the 2% projected growth in American GDP. That is a massive concentration of risk. If that productivity doesn't show up outside of the handful of tech giants currently dominating the space, the foundation of these valuations is going to get real shaky, real fast. There is also a quiet, brutal war happening in the supply chain. NVIDIA is hitting manufacturing walls, with reports suggesting a design pivot was required to address technical challenges in their latest architecture. Competitors are sensing blood in the water. We are seeing new chip architectures, including designs coming out of China, that perform computation directly inside memory arrays. This could eventually bypass the entire NVIDIA ecosystem. It is a complicated mess. You have governments like South Korea reportedly committing $880 billion to sovereign AI, effectively decoupling their chip demand from the whims of private quarterly earnings. You have defense contractors buying up niche electronics firms to pivot towards sensor-based intelligence. And you have developers trying to figure out if their expensive AI agents actually need all this compute, or if they are just burning tokens for the sake of it. The takeaway here is pretty simple if you are willing to look at it. The era of just pouring money into a pile of chips and hoping for magic is ending. We are in the prove-it stage now. The companies that survive won't be the ones that just build the biggest warehouse of servers. They will be the ones that can effectively manage the trade-offs between that massive, debt-fueled infrastructure and the messy, internal reality of how these models actually think. It is not a gold rush anymore. It is an engineering discipline, and frankly, that is a much harder game to play. That is the reality of the infrastructure boom. It is messy, but the way we govern that mess is arguably even more chaotic. The Supreme Court ruled that the president can remove agency members without cause. This effectively turns regulators into political appointees who serve at the pleasure of the White House. It creates a cycle of governance whiplash where priorities get purged every 4 years. That is a hell of a way to run a country, especially when you consider the long-term predictability businesses and citizens actually need. This shift toward a unitary executive is being mirrored in the Department of Defense. Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth has been purging senior military officers and blocking promotions for specific personnel. He is framing this as a necessary correction against diversity initiatives. But in practice, he is replacing a merit-based system with one built on ideological loyalty. This is tearing the gears out of a machine that relies on combat experience and peer-reviewed performance. Once you start treating the military like a political spoils system, you do not get it back easily. Look, this is the common thread right now. Whether it is the Supreme Court or the Pentagon, institutions are trading their structural integrity for short-term political wins. You see the same pattern in the Democratic Party's handling of recent electoral challenges. Party leaders and media allies spent months ignoring red flags regarding candidates because they were focused on the electoral map. By the time they finally dumped them, the damage was already done. They chose to protect a narrative instead of doing the basic vetting that keeps a party from looking like an absolute circus. It's a pattern of institutional gaslighting. When a scandal hits, the immediate play is no longer an objective look at the facts. It is to retreat into a media silo that tells your base exactly what they want to hear. Candidates are learning they can shield themselves from accountability by bypassing skeptical journalism entirely. They just find a friendly platform, frame the oversight as partisan sabotage, and wait for the news cycle to burn out. It works in the short term. But it destroys the shared reality. We need to actually function as a society. This is also why NATO is currently struggling to keep its head above water. At a recent forum, the alliance tried to project normalcy, but the United States is shifting its focus away from Europe, and the gap left behind is massive. Europe doesn't have the industrial or military capacity to fill it. They are trapped in a reactive position, waiting for Washington to decide if it still cares about collective security. The alliance is trying to minimize the potential for disaster by shortening meetings to a single session. That is not a strategy. That is a stopgap designed to avoid a total collapse. The reality is that we are living in a period of intense institutional fragility. The Supreme Court is giving the executive branch the tools to dominate the bureaucracy. The military is being hollowed out by a focus on ideological purity. And political parties are treating the truth as a negotiable asset in their power plays. It is all part of the same calculation. When you prioritize loyalty over competence, or optics over structure, you eventually become a hostage to your own lack of scrutiny. We are seeing the consequences of this in real time. When institutions abandon their gatekeeping duties, they don't just lose an election or a policy debate. They erode the basic trust that holds the entire system together. And the scary part is that we have no idea how hard that floor is going to be when we finally hit it. Anyway, that is where we are. Everything is transactional, the vetting is non-existent, and the people in charge seem perfectly fine with burning the furniture to keep the house warm for one more night, which, honestly, is a hell of a way to plan for the future. Financial planning experts across three major industry reports are calling for a complete overhaul of how we approach life after work. They are arguing that the traditional, fear-based model of hoarding wealth until the very end is fundamentally broken. The consensus is clear. We are moving away from a simple accumulation mindset toward something called strategic drawdown management. Here is the thing about the current financial playbook. It is obsessed with the idea that taxes are an existential threat. It sells you on the fear of inevitable tax hikes while ignoring the reality of how the government actually works. Politicians rely on retirees as their most consistent voting bloc, which means legislative trends have consistently favored this group for years. Instead of panic selling or obsessing over minor tax shifts, experts suggest a proactive approach. This involves using the window between retirement and the start of Social Security, roughly ages 66 to 69, to execute tactical moves like Roth conversions. By treating taxes as a manageable expense rather than a catastrophe, you can keep your income low enough to avoid Medicare premium spikes or unnecessary capital gains. It is a hell of a shift. Most people spend 40 years trying to minimize taxes through contributions, and then they completely freeze up when it is time to actually spend the money. Beat. That leads to the next big tension in these reports. There is a massive gap between the math of retirement and the reality of human behavior. Financial models often rely on a 4% rule, which assumes a worst-case historical scenario. This leads people to live far more frugally than they actually need to. They end up sitting on a pile of cash they are too terrified to touch, all while missing out on the joy of lifetime giving or simply enjoying their own health while they still have it. The advice here is to aim for a 90% success rate in your models rather than 100. That 10% gap is your safety buffer for a better life. And then there is the complexity threshold. As your portfolio grows, your strategy has to evolve. What worked when you were 40 is a liability by the time you hit 60. You stop being an investor and start being an operations manager. If you are still trying to handle your own estate planning or tax strategy with a large, complex portfolio, you are just asking for trouble. Beat. The reports also highlight the hidden dangers of family money. Mixing assets, like swapping homes or sharing the costs of renovations with siblings, is a recipe for litigation. Without a formal, written agreement that distinguishes between market growth and the value added by your own sweat equity, you are essentially gambling with your relationships. If you do not have a contract signed by your family, you do not have a plan. You have a ticking time bomb. Finally, there is the issue of the purpose vacuum. We treat retirement like a permanent vacation, but the data suggests that is a mistake. Humans need to feel useful. We need the social utility that a career provides. The experts suggest a trial run, volunteering, caregiving, or finding a new project before you actually hand in your resignation. If you don't have a plan for your time, you are going to be miserable, no matter how much money is sitting in your brokerage account. It is a lot to digest, but the takeaway is simple. We have to stop viewing retirement as a finish line. It is a series of predictable cycles. If you treat it like a math problem, you will fail. If you treat it like a design problem, you might actually get to enjoy the last 20 or 30 years of your life, which, honestly, is the whole point of the money in the first place. China fired a long-range ballistic missile into the South Pacific today. They did not provide the standard 48-hour notice, which, naturally, caused a bit of an international panic. Australian officials and their regional partners are now scrambling to tighten defense packs. It is a classic feedback loop. One power flexes, the neighbors panic, and suddenly everyone is locked into a more aggressive security posture. Meanwhile, the corporate world is showing its own brand of fragility. Richard White, the founder of WiseTech Global, resigned as chairman. This followed a 66% drop in share price over the last year. The company is currently facing police investigations into allegations and separate probes by corporate regulators. White is staying on the board, which tells you everything you need to know about how hard it is to actually cut ties when the foundation is rotting. These events feel disconnected, but they point to a shared problem. Whether it is a missile launch or a corporate boardroom, we are seeing a shift toward reactive, defensive posturing. Organizations are losing the ability to plan for the long term. They are just trying to survive the next headline. That brings us to the ongoing conversation regarding UFO disclosure in Congress. Proponents like Danny Sheehan, a constitutional attorney, argue that the U.S. government has been hiding recovered spacecraft and biological entities since 1947. The claim is that a shadow national security apparatus exists to protect petroleum-based economic interests and maintain military dominance. It sounds like paranoid fiction, right? But the conversation has moved from fringe internet forums into formal congressional inquiry. If Sheehan is right, we are looking at a system built on a massive, foundational lie. The argument is that this secrecy isn't just about hiding aliens. It is about maintaining a lock on energy technology that could theoretically replace the current global economy. When you look at this alongside the digital landscape, the thread becomes clearer. We are living in a society where our individual capability has been offloaded to digital systems. Your phone is tracking your location, your audio, and your sentiment. We have built a voluntary surveillance grid that we rely on for every single aspect of modern life. The vulnerability is absolute. If that digital layer fails, whether through a cyber attack or a solar event, the average person is effectively paralyzed. We have traded our autonomy for convenience, and we have done it with a smile. We are now in a position where the loss of a digital connection is effectively a loss of identity and survival logistics. The people running these systems know exactly how fragile they are. They prioritize information control because that is the only way to keep the lid on the pot. You see it in the way governments manage the UFO narrative to avoid a crisis of public trust. You see it in how corporations scramble to stabilize their image while the internal structure crumbles under legal scrutiny. It is all about managing the perception of stability. The powers that be are not necessarily building a better future. They are building a system designed for extreme dependency. They want us reliant on the infrastructure they control, whether that is the internet, the financial system, or the official version of history. The takeaway isn't that a massive cover-up is about to be blown wide open tomorrow. It is that the current ecosystem is designed to be brittle. When you rely on centralized narratives and centralized infrastructure, one bad day can bring the whole thing down. Those who realize this are starting to build their own redundancies. They are opting out of the dependency model before the system forces their hand. It is a shitty way to live, constantly looking for the exits, but it is starting to look like the only rational choice. Before we wrap up, here are a few other things that crossed my desk today. If you are trying to break into elite circles, don't ask for favors before you have anything to offer. You will look like a parasite, and you will get blacklisted faster than you can say sorry. Argentina's reliance on Lionel Messi forces them into a slow, controlled style of play. It works for them, but it leaves them wide open to high-intensity counterattacks from faster teams. Stop hitting the snooze button on your weekends. Waking up at different times messes with your melatonin levels, which creates a permanent state of social jet lag by the time Monday rolls around. Small firms are winning by making investment decisions in under 5 minutes. They are trading deep analysis for pure speed, which lets them grab talent before the bigger, slower players even open their emails. Europe's reliance on shutters and passive cooling is falling apart as nighttime temperatures climb. The buildings never cool down, and the old-school methods are becoming useless in a warming climate. Markets are currently twitching because of institutional portfolio rebalancing. Big funds are forced to sell off their best assets just to hit diversification quotas, which makes for a lot of artificial volatility. The podcast we regret to inform you is moving to the airwaves. They are running 10 updated episodes on CBC Radio 1 and SiriusXM Channel 169, starting July 8th. In the Odyssey, Telemachus finally stops watching his house fall apart and starts fighting back. He turns from a passive observer into a dangerous political player by confronting the suitors directly. Using AI to churn out content is a choice to prioritize speed over actual authorship. If you let a machine do the heavy lifting, you are not creating anything. You are just hitting a button. That is the wrap for tonight. Keep your head on a swivel, and I will see you tomorrow.